From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Mix some both up.
It's a think piece. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, this afternoon, it is April 19th, 2013.
And this is show number 134.
Yeah, so, hey Paul, how are you been?
I'm okay. A little sleepy.
Yeah.
I'm not even bothering. You can't hear it, but you'll hear it when you hear the actual podcast. I'm just sort of leaning away from the mic and touching other things and not really paying attention to what I should be doing. So there, now I am on the microphone better.
Reaching down between your legs.
My legs and
ease the seat back.
Oh, Panama.
Yeah. I love songs that you can interpret them any way you like. You know, I mean, sure, pretty much every Van Halen song is about a young horny dude, but,
yep.
You know, is Panama the girl? Is Panama the car? Is Panama the country?
Or is it a type of marijuana?
Or, yes, maybe all imagined because you're all high. It is a type of marijuana, and there was a song by that title, Panama Red.
Yes.
Which did not feature a guitar played with a hairdryer to get that cool revving sound.
Yeah.
I got to do that. I got to do that in one of our songs coming
up. Just play a guitar with another appliance. I say another appliance as if a guitar is an appliance.
Well, right. The hairdryer being the appliance in this sentence constructure.
Right.
Constructure.
Right.
I'm sticking with that word. Constructure. Yeah, that's been done. Maybe I'll use a toaster or something. You know, that's got to sound pretty cool on an electric guitar.
You could play it with like a, we have this Christmas present that my mom, my mom occasionally likes to go buy kind of things that seem like maybe a good idea at the time, but are actually pretty much entirely useless for Christmas for us every so often.
For Paul. Yeah.
Yeah. And a couple of years ago, she got us an electric grater. As in, you know, so greater technology has remained relatively consistent over, I would say, the centuries.
Right. Put item on greater, move, grate.
Yeah. Like you have a piece of metal with holes in it. You take the thing you want to grate, usually some sort of block of cheese.
Yeah.
Hold against greater, move cheese up and down.
Right. And there's the mandolin version that slices fingers, but still essentially the same thing.
Yeah. Well, the electric grater we got was essentially, it takes that formula and then switches it around. You hold the piece of cheese against said electric grater, you push the button, and the metal part goes up and down. But
America!
You get so freaked out by the moving of the metal part. And it's like it's not a very stable process, so it ends up, of course, you know, sort of shoving the block of cheese around. You inefficiently grate a thing, and make a lot of noise in the process.
That's definitely an item that is best repurposed, perhaps as an adjunct to an electric guitar.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe you use parts of it to build E.T.'s phone.
Boy, when I was a kid, I thought devices like that were the best. Like, I remember we had a home rotisserie.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big thing, fondue pots.
Yes.
And I always wanted a cold cut slicer.
Uh-huh. I have to say this just because I love the name of it so much. We had a pizza making appliance. I was going
to
say utensil, a pizza making appliance that was basically like a round flat skillet with a cover.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of thing you'd use to make sloppy joes or whatever.
It
was called a Whatta Pizzeria.
Oh, I remember that. We didn't have one. But
yep. And in fact, I believe the picture on the box had a picture. It was like the stereotypical big fat Italian chef dude making the OK sign. Like it was an actual physical dude posed in the pose that you normally see illustrated on pizza boxes.
So, you know, like, hey, I'm a real Italian and this is a real pizza.
I'm a chef. You see my chef hat. It mean I'm making a pizza. And oh, what a pizzeria this thing is.
So, two questions.
Yes.
One, did your family actually use it? And when you did, when the pizza was presented at the table, did the whole family as one do the little hand gesture and go, what a pizza?
A yes to the former, no to the latter.
Oh, that's sad.
It was a missed opportunity. I agree. In fact, I've got to lean over here and see if I can find...
Yeah, I think that's the picture for this podcast post.
Miro, what a pizzeria! Yep. Oh, man, I'm looking at it. You know what? It was Avery Schreiber. I'm looking at it right now. The dude on the What a Pizzeria box is, in fact, old laughing era comedian Avery Schreiber.
That is sad.
Those of us who grew up in the 70s may remember who he was, but I bet you anybody born 1980 or later has absolutely no idea who Avery Schreiber is.
Yeah, basically a comedian, comic actor who appeared in, well, I guess, as you said, Laugh-In, and ended up on a pizza appliance box.
Was actually part of a comedy duo for many years, and I'm trying to, it was Schreiber and, what was the name?
Messina.
Yes, no. Schreiber and Messina. Schreiber and Oates.
Yeah, Shriver and Oates and Garfunkel and Messina.
Yep. Burns. It was a team, comedy team of Burns and Schreiber. That was it. With comedian Jack Burns.
Oh, right. Jack Burns. He was he was Norwegian, and he appeared on, I remember we had a fondue set.
Yes.
It was called That's a Fondue.
It was called Good Fondue.
Good Fondue. Like a fondue. Let's offend everybody on this podcast. Let's go region by region.
See, absolutely.
The thing about appliances, like people make fun of hipsters now for like baking their own artisanal bread and, you know, making cheese, both of which things, by the way, I do now. But I think
you
that's
make cheese?
Much
this is news to me, actually.
Just started last season. There's a farm that trucks up from...
How do the cheese seasons break down? Does it correspond with like hockey season or?
Yeah. You make dips during hockey season that are more poutine like, and then during football season, they're more of your traditional queso. The whole trick to cheese making is cleanliness and then fresh milk, and you can make it with store-bought milk as long as it hasn't been like ultra-pasteurized, but it basically, whoops, oh, hold on, my phone just beeped at me.
Oh, yeah, somebody calling you?
The battery's not low.
Oh, that would be bad.
All right, I'm going to be away from the microphone. You contemplate cheese, I'm going to go swap this phone out.
Oh, I have to contemplate cheese, do I? It's interesting insofar as that, you go do your thing because you're talking to me and I have to relay what you're saying to me as well as what I'm saying. I'm interested in the fact that this has unintentionally become a very cheese-themed podcast. We do indeed spend a good deal of our time with cheese. Many would say we are cheesy ourselves, ha ha lol. We do like a good cheese. Although I personally, being the fussy eater that I am, I'm not actually much for the various exotic cheeses, you know, like a brie or like a cheese plate that is more than, well, you know what I mean, like anything that is exotic to Americans. Anything that is not, well, you know, I'm a little more sophisticated than that, but I am not a person who goes out to buy a good cheese to eat said cheese. It into my food repertoire. It's not that I hate it. I just sort of never quite, it's kind of like alcohol. I don't think I ever really developed a proper taste yet for cheeses.
It definitely is. I'm back, by the way. It definitely is something that, you get or you don't. Like Mrs. Storm, she enjoys cheeses, but not the runny cheeses, the brie, the camemberts. but like a nice aged cheddar is a thing of beauty. But yeah, basically, finally had a source of fresh milk. Not like right from the cow. We don't have a cow.
Right. Oh, you mean, but you have like a dairy source now?
Yeah, like I live in Northern Virginia, and the Shenandoah Valley is basically a couple of hours drive to where they have a lot of dairy farms. And
right.
There is one farmer that comes up and brings the fresh milk along with the produce.
One farmer. It brings the milk for the entire Northern Virginia, D.C. region.
Yeah, yeah. Ned Milkerton.
He's a huge farmer. He's like 80 feet tall.
He's the Paul Bunyan of dairy farmers.
He is. And, that would be great if you repurposed like, you know, characters like Paul Bunyan and other tall tale characters who just did like ordinary things. Like Pecos Bill was just like an air traffic controller.
You know, we know artists who could do this.
We do.
Basically repurpose, update for the internet age. All of the legends that we knew were bullshit when we were kids, like Johnny Appleseed.
Right.
Well, I guess he would be like the patron dude of the internet.
Yeah.
Intranet. Notice I said intranet.
You did.
Because it's not for everybody.
And I noticed it.
Yeah. Yeah, cheese making is not difficult in its most basic way.
Here is a genuine question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a difference between a cheese maker and a cheese monger?
A cheese maker?
What makes one mong?
Mong is a seller, a trader, a barterer. Uh-huh. So the cheesemaker might also be a cheesemonger, but a cheesemonger is not necessarily a cheesemaker.
I see.
So, and actually there's a great history. I read a book about the history of cheese, which is what got me into making cheese, in fact. Well, one, I love cheese, and two, milk available, three, read the book. But historically, cheese is an item that, you know, it's perishable to some degree, and cheeses were made to last longer, either higher salt content or getting the moisture out of them, like a Parmesan. They have found shipwrecks from ancient times that have jars that have the residue from cheeses so that they could tell,
right,
like where this ship was from by what it was carrying in its hold. I don't remember the point of that, but it's fascinating the range that you can make with, it's a lot like brewing, which I was into a long time ago and would like to pick up again at some point when there are enough people around to drink everything that I would brew. But yeah, basically, I love the alchemy of it. I love anything like that, where you take this raw ingredient, milk, and add some powders to it, you know, heat it up. And
put on your robe and wizard hat and throw it into a beaker.
You can understand why people in older times would believe in magic like that, that you don't understand. How does this happen? It was milk, now it's cheese.
Apparently they were cavemen.
Yes, in medieval England when they were developing cheddar, it was cavemen, and cavemen eat cheese, become smarter and talk with an accent.
Yes, they went from the Iron Age to the Bronze Age to the Cheese Age, and that was really what I think evolved.
Right, straight to the monocle age after that. Well, that reminds me, I have I don't think it's available, nor will be for a while, but a Paul and Storm recommends, speaking of this topic of ancient times and wizards.
Right.
A friend of ours who is a very funny webcomic, Scott Meyer, who does...
webcomics. Basic Instructions is the name of his webcomic.
Basic Instructions. Which in and of itself is very funny, but he has written a novel whose premise dovetails with that. So I'm just going to plant that seed for when it's ready. It's very entertaining.
Nice bit of buzz marketing there.
I'm buzzing. Well, who knows? We might not release this for a year. You know, hold
it back.
That's
true.
But yeah, it's sort of that alchemy thing, and I love that sort of developing these secret powers. And of course, I developed choreography to go with it, so it looks cool, too. And I do have robes.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Now, did you have when you were growing up, did you have a child's chemistry set, like a toy chemistry set or anything like that? Is this a lifelong fascination with the alchemical arts?
It's not. I think it may have actually begun with brewing. I had a chemistry set when I was a kid, but I honestly, it didn't engage me. I was into building things more. I was a builder. I used to think I would be an architect and still have those tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was brewing because I so badly wanted beer that wasn't crappy standard American beer that it sort of got me into that world. And I think that carved out new circuits in my brain, like a new pattern to follow.
Right.
Which sort of happens a lot. And then all of a sudden you find yourself interested in other things that are similar to it.
Hmm.
So, yeah. And there again, the connection between beer and cheese.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love a good beer cheese.
Dude.
To like dip, like soft pretzels in. Speaking of which, you also mentioned you've been making soft pretzels lately.
That's correct.
It's this podcast is all about cheese and storm making things.
Doing and making, man. My credo at the end, that's no lie. yeah, it's incredibly easy to make pretzels, and it's the same thing.
Oh, me have flour, me have magic dust, me mix together, now it pretzel.
That's a Bavarian version of the cheddar town they were keeping in Germany.
Is yeast a old Bavarian for magic dust?
Der Yeasten, yes, yeast does actually mean magic pixie fairy powder in German.
Mm-hmm.
Though, of course, in German, it's magic pixie fairy powder. No, yeast. That's not it at all. Yeah, it's very satisfying. In fact, we Mrs. Storm and I like to go to thrift stores to do actually a lot of our shopping when we're not shopping on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And found for $30, speaking of old appliances, an old Sunbeam stand mixer.
Ah, yeah.
And probably from the late 70s, maybe early 80s, back
and
when...
was likely built to last through the apocalypse, I'm guessing.
Exactly. Like back then, even the cheapy appliances were still made with like the surplus steel that was from battleships from World War II.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was a tank from the Korean War or something, got repurposed.
Yeah, like I think like the Sunbeam and Oster corporations bought up the scrap and had like an entire town where they just laid out all these old war machines and carved them into appliances or stamped them. I'm not sure. But yeah, $30 for this thing.
Wow.
In part to abet our pretzel pizza and shortbread baking habits. But yeah, it's a true joy to crack a fresh pretzel as it's just cooled a little bit out of the oven with mustard procured on the internet. And soon, once the milk appears again, perhaps some custom cheese.
Boo.
And that's the beautiful thing. If you're making your own, you can flavor it however you like.
You could make like a jalapeno bacon. You could make the everlasting gobstopper. The what was the thing that Violet Beauregard ate in Willy Wonka?
The gum
that was like a whole meal.
Yeah, I don't remember.
You could make
what it was
the
called.
Cheese equivalent of that turns you into a great big blueberry at the end.
And the snozzberries will taste like snozzberries.
Oh, man, a good snozzberry cheese. Tough to find. It's out of Bavaria anyway.
So I'm not in... The thing is to make really highfalutin cheeses. Like, it's easy to make a basic cheese. Like, last year I just made the equivalent of, like, a cream cheese, cottage cheese. I didn't go into the firm cheese territory.
Right.
But I looked at, like, the recipe for, like, the traditional cheddar, and it involves... You know, start it at this temperature, then turn it up 2 degrees and hold it there for 5 hours. And I'm not quite ready for that.
You're not ready for cooking that involves a lab coat?
Well, I am, but I feel like I can't do things a little bit. I have to have everything lined up. I have to know everything about it, and I have to have exactly the right equipment and just go for it that way. So I need to find a good temperature regulator. So if you're listening and you are a cheesemaker or a cheesemonger who knows about the craft and know of a system for regulating temperature that doesn't cost thousands of dollars, I know there are those systems available, hit me up with that knowledge.
And there you go. All right.
Wow, we've been going and going and haven't
We have. It's been 20 minutes of cheese talk. Among other things.
I haven't even to tap the notes I have here, which, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, here's something that's related and that is sort of a note.
Okay.
We had a close encounter with excellent dough just a few days ago.
Oh God, yes.
So coal-fired pizza, if you're not familiar, in New York City in particular, but I'm sure across the country, pizza ovens were fueled by coal. And
in the olden days, in days of yore,
right back when there were cavemen and no cheese.
White we have black rocks. First. Set black rocks on fire, make good pizza.
And it does. I guess it's just the temperature, and you imagine that there's some extra little flavor to it, as if it were cooking on top of a barbecue. But right there in the shadow of, literally in the shadow of the Brooklyn Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we I guess that's a recommends, and that was Grimaldi's. Yeah. Grimaldi's pizza.
That was as you so aptly described it. I mean, it's almost impossible to say a given pizza is the best pizza I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, it's like saying this is the best television show because there's so many different types. As you said, we've certainly neither of us has ever had better pizza.
Yeah, that's like, how I like to phrase it.
Yeah. It's way up there. It was really, really good, and it was simple, and it was tasty. It's the kind of pizza where you don't have to put anything else on it. That is a rare pizza, frankly. Like, mm-hmm. I always immediately reach for, you know, the pepper and the hot pepper and the Italian seasoning on just about any pizza I get. Especially because where I live in sort of the Philly suburbs area, there are 900 skabillion pizza places. Yeah. And almost all of them, while they make adequate to very good pizza, don't really put enough flavor in for my taste because I live around big piles of boring white people.
Yeah.
And this, like, so it's a very rare pizza that I encounter where I do not, like, my first instinct is not to reach for flavor enhancers. And that speaks very highly of this particular pizza in my book.
Yeah, I confess to adding the hot pepper to it, but that's kind of a personal.
Yeah, I mean, I did as well. I just didn't immediately feel like I had to.
Oh no, no, no! Quite delicious as it was.
Yep. And in fact, I had one of the. We had a half pepperoni and sausage and half plain, because you really can't take the full proper measure of a pizza until you have a plain version of it, until you have a clean field, so to speak.
That's like with sushi that allegedly you. You order the egg sushi to judge. That's one of the ways you can judge a good sushi restaurant, because I guess it's a very simple thing, but takes a great degree of care to do properly.
Right.
And that it really allows you to taste the rice as well. Like, you know, we Americans, the approach is often, oh, a big pile of fish, gob, gob, gob. but that there's really, at least if it's quality sushi, there's something to the rice. It's a whole process. Like that movie that you had recommended.
Oh, yeah. Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Yeah.
Was terrific. And one of the sort of subplots was one of the younger apprentices who was just heartbroken and discouraged because after a year, he still had not passed rice making.
Right.
It was still, sorry, this is not good enough. I can't serve this. Throw it out. And then the day that he finally got it right, it was like the skies opened up and suddenly everyone was wearing monocles and not living in caves.
Yep.
But yeah, there is a great joy to something that is simple but done well.
It is true. Like a good soft pretzel.
Like a good soft pretzel. State Farm is there. you know, next time I'm up or you're down, we'll have to make us some fresh pretzels. It's really
going to do that.
Pretzel party.
Pretzel party. Maybe we'll wait.
Maybe we'll live cast it. Invite the world to our pretzel party.
Exactly. Maybe we'll have Gordon Ramsay come in to shout at us while we make it.
And you can have some.
Make it more interesting.
That would make it interesting.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That's been 25 minutes nearly of talking about mostly food, which is about right for you and me, I think.
Yeah, I don't know why we don't categorize this as a food or cooking podcast. Like, I have stuff about rock operas and cosplay and all kinds of other stuff.
But oh, frankly, it's all stuff that can keep, right?
That'll keep. I'm happy
with because you know
where
it's not really a cooking podcast. It's really more an eating podcast.
That's
where
true,
we just sit too. Around and talk about delicious things we eat.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an inordinate amount of our regular time. Our non-podcasting time is spent doing that as well. Truth told.
Kind of true. There are them who enjoy food and those who should.
Yep. I guess I will go through the Paul and Storm calendar real quick.
Yeah, run down the next couple
weeks. Let's see. May 3rd, we're at the Birchmere with John Hodgman in Alexandria, Virginia. On the 11th, we're part of the Thrilling Adventure Hour at the Bell House in Brooklyn. There's two shows. They're both sold out, unfortunately, but we're in them nonetheless. June 1st, back in Virginia, in Vienna, Virginia, at Jam and Java, the old stomping grounds.
Our own show?
Our own show with no Hodgman. We're 100% Hodgman free at that show.
Feverishly working on new material for that.
Indeed. Insofar as I have a fever.
Yep.
And the only prescription is new songs.
Then
let's see. There is, of course, the Balboa Theater Woodstock 5.0 in San Diego, which is July 18th. Tickets already more than half sold out for that, I believe, at this point. And we haven't even announced any guests yet. So act sooner rather than later. We have another con or three or four, hopefully, coming up during the summer con season. Nothing official enough to announce yet, but we're working on that. And also, while I'm not officially announcing any dates yet, I think we are to the point where we can say that we will be doing a small amount of touring of the Will Wheaton versus Paul and Storm show on the East Coast and in part of the center of the United States come fall. We can't get much more specific about those dates yet, but watch this space because we will be getting specific very soon. That's going to be fun.
It's rapidly coagulating, much like cheese after you add the starter culture.
And the starter culture sounds like the name of a really bad 80s Europop group.
Very much so. Without Boy George, of course.
Oh, no, of course. But it was like a couple members of Culture Club broke off. No, that's too obvious and on point. I think it'd be like a couple of members of Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. A couple of the original members from the 70s broke off and ended up forming the starter culture.
Right, two of the Maneuvers formed a band.
Yes.
But we are,
so there's that.
We are not Maneuvers.
No, we are not.
But I am Storm.
And I am Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. My name is Dr. Julius Sumner Miller, and physics is my business. Watch it now. Watch it.
Go do things.